Hello and welcome to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Kukowski, your host of still the only show that I know of that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. Today is Sugar Show Day, and we're going to be talking about some sugar that's in the news based on some of the articles in the Food Navigator and some of the other journals that talk about the industry and what's going on in the industry. There were a couple of interesting articles on natural ingredients and Food Navigator that I thought everyone may be interested in. I won't go into this idea of more insects showing up in some of the foods in the United States, but that is also a news article that they are expecting to find more and more applications for insect proteins in foods here in the United States. If you watch Shark Tank at all, you'll know that every now and then, I think there's twice or three times in the last couple of years where people have come to them with the idea of using crickets especially and grasshoppers in food as a dietary protein, as an animal, I guess, an animal protein as opposed to a vegetable protein, which not everybody is really thrilled with. I don't know a lot about that area, so we're just going to call that enough for right now and move on to some other news. I am going to be starting the Dental Hygienist Mastermind coming up in October on the 6th, Tuesday the 6th. And there's still a few openings for that. So if you're listening to this episode in September and you're interested in joining the Dental Hygienist Mastermind for improving the oral systemic practice in your practice, let me know. You can contact me at Shirley@crosslinkradio.com. And we'll get you signed up and underway. We are offering the first session once more on periodontal disease, so I look forward to doing that with everybody. I've also started to offer the Dental Hygienist Mastermind for dental assistants. There seem to be a lot of dental assistants out there who are extremely interested in practice and in doing a little bit more, especially if they're advanced practice type of dental assistants. And there's a lot of things that they can do, dental assistants can do, to improve the practice bottom line. And so the first time I had dental assistants in the mastermind group, it was very successful. You have to be the right kind of person, that's for sure, to take some time out of the day and to improve the practice bottom line. These kinds of things only work when the bottom line gets a little massage. So let me know if you'd like to join us on October 6th for the Mastermind, and we'll get you lined up and ready to go for that. So there we go with that. So then the Sugar Show is the offering that I have to help illuminate what's going on with sugar, why sugar shouldn't be vilified, I guess, is the word that I want to use there, because it's not a horrible, horrible thing, and we need to really understand how all those things fit together and how sugar fits into our diet and not abuse the living daylights out of it. When it comes right down to it, we have an obligation to moderation. And the way that we're using sugar and sweeteners in the American diet in particular, and probably worldwide, I don't know, is pretty amazing. When the World Health Organization has to step in and make a recommendation of the amount of sugar a person should be consuming, I think that's a pretty decent red flag that something needs to change. And that's what we're going to be talking about on the Sugar Show in general. And today we're going to be talking about some sugar news. First out of the box is this email that I received from Dr. Bill Dome, who is pretty instrumental in keeping a lot of clinicians in the loop with a lot of different kind of information, and particularly the effects of different bacteria on the endothelium of the cardiovascular system, and sleep apnea, and all of these really out there kind of treatments and reasons for periodontal disease, and how it matches up with the rest of the body. So he's been very helpful, just keeping everyone alerted to that. And he posted the other day on the Exceptional Dental Forum this email or report from from Robert Wayant. And it looks like it's part of a longer email, but he wanted to kind of put this out there because, like me, I think he wants people to understand that sugar in and of itself is not horrible, and that we have an innate drive to sugar. And he's a dentist, so this has pertinence to teeth. So I will read this verbatim for you, and I think that this is going to be pretty interesting information. Jane is referring to one of the signals in our genome-wide association study. One of the many genes we found associated with higher caries rate was a sweet preference gene, yet to be replicated. It turns out that those with the bad allele, more sweet preference, had a higher caries rate. Overall, the heritability of caries in our study, about 3,500 people, was at the range of 40 to 50%. That can be interpreted as about half of the variability in caries between individuals can be explained by genetic factors. Sugar, again, is rearing its ugly head. The problem with sugar, or problem with the sweet attraction, I guess, is that the most prolific sugar, the easiest sugar, the cheapest sugar to get, feeds the oral bacteria, and that leads to dental decay and proliferates a caries infection in the mouth. So we have an innate drive for sweeteners, and I think we do not appreciate that nearly enough in our conversations with our patients at all. Then we have here, this is from beverageDaily.com. And if you remember Jamie Oliver, he had a TV show here in the United States a few years ago where his goal was to change the whole diet in the school system. And he did that in one school system in North Carolina. And he tried to do it in Los Angeles. And we were able to watch him crash and burn under the incredible pressure that he was put under by the school board and the special interests. He was literally squashed before our very eyes. It was enlightening. The show ended early. I think they anticipated 10 episodes, and I don't know that it made it past 3 or 4. If you can find that, I think it's worth a couple of hours of television watching. It was very interesting. And I would highly encourage everybody to follow Jamie Oliver and see what a real pioneer in front of a camera can do. And what his suggestion was, according to this article here, was that was to increase the tax on sodas, particularly beverages, sparkling beverages, sweetened beverages, and use that money to fight diseases. And in Mexico, he was successful in doing that, or it's Mexico is doing it. Let's see, what does it say here? According to the chef, Mexico's recently implemented tax on sugary soft drinks was transforming the health of the country's population, and urged the UK government to do a U-turn on implementing a sugar tax here. The dentists in Wisconsin tried to do that, I don't know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. It didn't go over here either. The intention was to use that money to fight dental decay and to pay dentists to fix all these broken teeth. And, didn't go over. It did go over in California don't know whatever happened to that. Maybe I should look for that, or if somebody in the audience can let me know where to find information about that. So Oliver also blamed sugar-saturated food and drink for a rise in overweight and obese people in the UK, now standing at 64% of adults, which is also claimed to cost the National Health Services $47 billion a year. So it's expensive to have all of this overweight problem, but it's just too easy to get food, period. And the Beverage Association's response to him is that the tax in Mexico only reduced calories by 4 calories a person, and 4 calories a person, and that doing it in the UK may reduce calories by, I don't know, 7% reduction in calories from soft drink in the past 3 years. So that's their answer. Well, it's just going to barely reduce calories, when we know that it's not about the calories at all. So they are throwing in this red herring kind of an argument, where that it's such a minuscule number of calories that make a difference. And a calorie is a calorie, as we know. And that's absolutely not true. So we are in a situation where we can do more, and we can help by just keeping the discussion on the straight and narrow and nipping these little side snipes in the bud. And if you can imagine a twig with buds on it, I think you can kind of see this is a perfect metaphor. We don't need them to turn into anything. They're not going to lead anywhere. If you think of a pussy willow, for instance, you have those little fuzzy buds, and they really don't turn into a twig. They don't turn into anything. They just turn into trouble and seeds. And so I would encourage you to have, when those conversations come up, a calorie is not a calorie. That's been proven a number of times, and you can find a lot of support for that in on YouTube. And we also need to focus in on the sugar and how much we drink, and how addictive sugar is, or sweeteners are, and how sugar itself is not only detrimental in the amount that we're using, it also is replaceable by healthful sugars. Just yesterday, I did another interview with Dr. Ibrahim, with Dr. Peldiak co-hosting, and what we've learned is that monk fruit is another one of these sugars that it has medicinal benefits, and we could be using that instead in beverages, and we're not. We're swapping out. The big news was that Pepsi went from, what did they go? They went from NutraSweet to Sucralose. So they're both bench sweeteners. You don't need a lot in order to get, you know, the sweetness you want in the soda, but monk fruit and some of these other sugars that we've been talking about are equally as beneficial. Let's see, here is the FDF Director General. I'm not sure what FDF stands for, but it has something to do with the government in the UK. We strongly share Jamie Oliver's commitment to improving public health and agree that change is needed. While we haven't been privy to early screenings, reports suggest that the documentary oversimplifies the obesity challenge. The causes of obesity are far more wide-ranging than any single ingredient, food, or drink. A narrow focus on a single ingredient detracts from the clear and consistent information on nutrition. That's not true either. Diets and healthy lifestyles of consumers want and need. Leading health experts in the UK government support a comprehensive approach to tackling poor health, including balanced diets and physical exercise. Additional taxes on food or drinks on top of already enforced 20% on most foods would be regressive, ineffective, and unworkable. Well, that may be true, but we can focus in on one ingredient, because that ingredient is the thing that draws us to all of these wrong foods. I think that's a safe way of looking at that. So let's see here. My next thing is that elderberry extract may improve obesity inflammation. We know that obesity is an inflammatory condition, and that larger people have higher C-reactive protein numbers, and everything we can do to reduce that is awesome. And black elderberry extract may improve obesity-related metabolic disturbances like triglyceride levels, inflammation, and insulin resistance. This is still in the mouse study, but I think it's in the mouse study departments, but I think it's really worthwhile making sure that we get a good understanding of all of these kind of benefits from these extracts. It's going to be expensive at first, especially if we're going to try to use it as a treatment. However, if we use it as a preventive, when we're giving it to people who are not yet obese, I think we're going to be finding that using these in the earlier stages of disease is really a benefit. The magic piece here, just like in cranberry, is a similar molecule called anthocyanin, as opposed to proanthocyanidins. God, why do they have to be so complicated to say? So we have a high amount of the anthocyanin in these elderberries, and growing them is probably pretty easy, and using them in your food and drink is going to be really awesome. So start including those into the diet if you are looking to improve your diet. Next, I have an infographic to kind of go over from Corn Naturally. And this is kind of funny because of this whole idea of high fructose corn syrup and how beneficial it is for the industry because it's inexpensive. It's a bulk sweetener. It can improve a lot of qualities of some foods. It has a good mouthfeel. I mean, it has a lot of attributes to it. The problem is that it's metabolized exclusively in the liver and can lead to a more fatty liver, according to a lot of research that people are talking about. But what this infographic is about from Corn Naturally, it says that consumers and soda, the difference in what they say and what they do. The 2015 Sweetener 360 compared 15,000 consumers' attitudes with their purchase behavior. The research shows a drastic difference between what consumers say and do when buying soda. So it's this vocal minority again that's trying to move the needle, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's really not so good. Let's take a look at the data, it says. Consumers may say they avoid certain sweeteners, but they still buy soda formulated with all sweetener types. What six consumer segments say and do. The segment of Walter with no health worries, they gave it a name and everything. Oh, brother, the way they do this stuff. No health worries. They say that the percent that say they avoid sugar is 6.2, and only 0.5% of that group says that they avoid sugar. And the percent of soda sales in that segment is 14% of the high fructose corn syrup sugars are used, and regular sugar is only 8%. So where only half a percent say they would avoid high fructose corn syrup, 14% of their money is spent on high fructose corn syrup sodas. Joan, the diabetics and dieters segment, says that they avoid sugar. 39.9% say they avoid sugar, and 14% of their money spent on soda is on sugar soda. So there you go. And the Teresa group with too many priorities, whatever that means, says that about 0.3% say they would avoid high fructose corn syrup sodas, and they spend 15% of their total soda consumption on high fructose corn syrup, sodas. So they're really not avoiding, are they? Sometimes I'm looking at these graphs, and I would I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes, and I'm going to have you take a look at this too, because they make it look like it's super easy, and they gave these great names to the segments that they were looking at. And the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm confused, and I don't understand exactly what's happening here. The Sandra group, where they talk about taste over health, they say that 2.4% will avoid high fructose corn syrup, but 18% of soda sales to that group is on high fructose corn syrup sodas. So they're still spending a lot of their money on soda. So the, on high fructose corn syrup soda. I don't know how you notice. I don't think it says high fructose corn syrup right on the bottle. But when you compare the Sandra group, which has a taste over health kind of a perception, and the Walter group with no health priorities, the Sandra group is 2.4% would avoid high fructose corn syrup, and the no health worries would avoid 5.5% avoids high fructose corn syrup, but it's 18% of soda sales in the taste over health group and 14% of soda sales in the no health worries group. So even though more people in the taste over health say they avoid high fructose corn syrup, they spend more of their money on high fructose corn syrup sodas. So they're not really saying what it is that they're doing. The Healthy Balance Seeker group is probably interesting as well, because it does show a balance. 24% say they would avoid sugar, and 22% of soda sales are of sugar sodas. So the all natural group, conversely, is quite a bit different. 43% say they would avoid sugar, and 18% of the soda sales is on sugar sodas. So that I think is kind of interesting. 43% say they would avoid sugar, and 9% of that group say they would avoid high fructose corn syrup. So, yeah, they just don't do what they say. They're just not doing what they're saying. Actions speak louder than words to these companies, and they have to go by what the bottom line is. And if you're really going to be avoiding those things, you really need to be avoiding those things. And when we're talking to our patients about sugars, we have to give them better options. We have to give them a way to have a sweet beverage without compromising the whole. So I think that's pretty interesting when it comes right down to it. We need better options, and we need to help our people, our patients, be more consistent. And this is another little more from Corn Naturally. They were on a mission to get their word out. They hired some really nice artists to put the Corn Naturally infographics together, and they wonder in this infographic whose opinion matters most: mainstream consumers or a vocal minority. And they are saying obviously that the vocal minority is the one that's really pushing for all of this stuff. And and they're showing in these infographics that what's being said and what the media is saying is not exactly being played out in dollars and cents. And you just have to wonder how this kind of thing works. The Sweetener 360, a landmark segmentation study conducted in part by Mintel Consulting and Nielsen, found that the most health-conscious consumers, a segment referred to as All Natural Stacy, is also the most likely to keep up with sweetener news via social media. So, with respect to social media, take a little second out here to ask you to share these segments. This is important information that doesn't get out to most people. 84% of consumers in the Stacy segment stay on top of sweetener news. 75% of consumers in Stacy segment think media coverage about sweeteners is credible. And 69% of consumers in Stacy segment get their news from social media. Take a look, closer look at social conversations, though. The vocal minority is more concerned with total versus hype. So they're trying to say that there's a lot of hype out there because of the massive amount of information versus the type of information that's credible. When referencing sweeteners, the social conversation is dominated by mentions of total sugars, not specific sweetener types. And that can be problematic because we have a lot of sweetener types that are healthful. 43% of the conversations on social media and health are about sugar. 13% are other ingredients. 17% is salt. Wow, I almost never see anything about salt. I see a bit about gluten, and that's only 5%. Can you imagine? I guess it depends on what social media you're looking at. 68% of consumers in the Stacy segment think moderation is more important than avoiding specific sweeteners. I'm in that group, I guess. In line with the rest of the population, these are total sugars, 43%, and high fructose corn syrup, 9% of their sweetener concerns. Stacy's critical purchase drivers, not overly processed, is number one at 73%. That's 73% of them don't want to have overly processed foods. They're showing a picture here on this infographic of a muffin. The muffin looks like it's come from a gas station. It's kind of funny that they would choose that photograph. 73% of their purchase driving decisions is whether or not the food is part of a healthy diet, and 70% is taste. So all of those seem to be pretty close and pretty equal. Despite her all natural preferences, Stacy still buys her fair share of products formulated with all types of sweeteners. 13% of the purchases are with high fructose corn syrup, 15% are with sugar, and 12 are low, no calorie sweeteners. So that 12% can be divided out into minuscule little slivers with respect to sucralose, NutraSweet, xylitol, erythritol, stevia, agave, and a bunch of others. So I think that this is a pretty interesting infographic, and I hope that you would find it to be as well. So that's it. We're to the end of the Sugar Show for today. Thank you for tuning in again. This is Shirley Gutkowski of Crosslink Radio signing off, and I hope to see you at one of the events that I'll be at in the upcoming weeks. And I hope you enjoy the interviews with Dr. Ibram and Dr. Peldiak. We'll be talking about monk fruit coming up and sucralose coming up. And boy, I tell you, there's a couple of things there that are just major head shakers. So give yourself enough time with those interviews, because Dr. Ibrahim has an accent, and I had to boost the volume on his side. So I hope it's at least easier to understand with a little bit of extra volume. So have a great rest of the day, and I hope to see you soon. Sayonara. Oh.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio.